The lights are on red. We're away.
GPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, March 6, 2009. This is episode number 167. I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today to talk about the best that's happening in motorcycle road racing all over the world. So that includes MotoGP and World Superbike, right? So we got a big show today, long show, because Jim Race did an interview with Eugene Laverty, and we're going to run that. And we also did a call with Jules doing a wrap-up for the World Superbike opener at Phillip Island. So that's some really, really good stuff. Before we get to that, got a couple of emails I want to cover real super quick. First of all is a big shout-out thank you to Susie Frisbee. She was kind enough to donate to MotoGPOD, and I do appreciate that. Helps pay for the bandwidth and all that sort of thing. And she also mentions that she has for sale an RV spot on Momentum Mountain for the World Superbike Round at Miller Motorsports Park. So this is coming up in a while, and this is a very, very difficult spot to get. So we're going to help Susie, you know, move her spot because she can't use it. RV spot on Momentum Mountain. It's our friend backed out on the second spot, and they need to sell it. It includes an RV spot on Momentum Mountain, the best viewing point on the track, right above high-speed corners. The workout and scream, over 80% of the track is visible, and only 30 spots exist. Two general admission tickets, two paddock passes, all Thursday, May 28th through Sunday, May 31st. It's an incredible deal. All of that for only $500. So we're going to hopefully help Susie send that out. So if you're interested in Susie Frisbee's deal, send me an email and I'll forward it on to Susie. I don't necessarily want to give her email out over the air, but my email is bob@motogpod. If you want to go to Miller Motorsports Park and have a really, really great camping spot with a fantastic view of the track and all of that, send me an email, bob@motogpod.com. And, of course, we will forward that on to Susie. Let's see. The other one was from Don Rhodes. And Don Rhodes started a motorcycle calendar, or excuse me, a Google calendar. And he's putting all of the motorcycle racing airtimes for the United States. This is the stuff that's on Speed. So he's trying to put it together a calendar of the broadcast times on Speed. Because we already have Adam Kress's calendar, which is really, really great. But it tells us the times that the races are actually happening. So now Don is putting in together a calendar that tells us the times the races are going to be showing up on Speed TV here in the United States. So I will put a link to that up on the MotoGPOD website, and you can check it out up there. Other than that, let's see. I gave a big shout-out to Susie Frisbee. Thank you very much for donating the podcast. And I think other than that, we got to get on with the show here, because Jules and I do a very, very long call, and then we've got Jim Race's interview with Eugene Laverty that's also very, very good stuff. So we're over an hour and a half already, so let's get on with it. Okay, we got Jules on the phone. How are you doing today, Jules?
I'm okay. How are you?
I am fine. Fine. Staying busy, as I assure you are. But I had a fun weekend, because we had World Super Dupers and talk about some good stuff there.
Off-season is over.
Yes. They're getting off to a pretty good start, because, I mean, we've got Qatar coming up in, well, about 2 weeks from now, right? Yeah, week and a half. Yeah. And I'm actually going to go up to Portland on that weekend, so I'm planning on, I'll go to Kelly's O on Sunday. I'm going to watch the race on Speed with Darren Carpenter and hopefully Dave Sangster and whoever, Fergus might be there, Fergus Caldicott. And, you know, whoever else on it can go to watch the races at Kelly's O, so that'll be a good time.
Nice.
Yeah. Don't get to do that very often. You know, it's about a 3-hour drive, so it's a long ways, especially when you figure, you know, Sunday afternoon, going to have a couple of beers for the races, you know, and, blah, blah, blah. So,
yeah, I was actually really planning, I was planning on going to the Ace Cafe in San Francisco. That's great. I mean, I don't have an excuse like you, 3 hours. I mean, it's 15 minutes away. Well, not 15, but like 25 minutes away. And, but, you know, we've been moving, so.
Yeah.
Just finished moving this week. So
biggest trauma you can go through, except for like, you know, divorce and stuff, or death in the family, maybe. I mean, it's awful. Moving sucks.
Yep.
So, but you're all settled in now. You got a nice new place going on. You got your internet set up.
Yeah, I have an office. I'm recording this from an office where I don't get, you know, bothered anymore. So it's kind of
nice. That's cool. Good, good, good. So maybe we should talk about motorcycle racing.
Yeah.
You want to start off with the World Supers in Phillip Island, or?
Well, let's just quickly go over, I think, the what happened during testing at Qatar in MotoGP. Get
that
out of the way, and then we'll get to the fun stuff.
Wow, that's sad.
Well, I mean, sorry.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean, but it's you know, this is MotoGPOD, and we're
we still have over a month before we actually get any racing in MotoGP.
Exactly, and yeah, some interesting stuff sort of happening in Qatar. I have to admit, I did not follow the news very closely.
Well, it was you know, your usual stoner lettery thing, and Rossi was up there. The guys, so basically Yamaha's doing really well, as usual, during testing. And I think the most interesting thing that I found was that Honda is just not. Honda's like, so it's basically Stoner. And Nicky Hayden is figuring his stuff out. So he's getting good lap times. He's up in the top four, I think. And then Suzuki, and then you get Honda, and of course at the bottom of is Marco Melandri with the what are they calling this guy the team now? It's like
Hayate,
Hayate.
Or something along those lines. I'm not 100% sure.
So and he's already saying, "Ooh, we're gonna need some help."
He's already saying, "Ooh, this was a big mistake. I should have stayed in supercar."
Right. But I think the big news that came out of Qatar was that Danny Pedrosa got seriously hurt. He had a crash on day two, and he has to have a knee operation. He like re-injured his knee from like a few years ago, and he's in pretty bad shape. He's probably not going to be. It's questionable he's going to be ready for the Jerez test. And even if he's there, he's not going to be 100%, obviously. So, but he should be okay by the time we start. We still have a month and a week before Qatar. So, I think the biggest news in MotoGP was actually not not the session, but the fact that Monster is now sponsoring Tactua.
Right.
So that whole sponsorship moved over from Kawasaki to Tactua, and I guess the open door was with Valentino Rossi wearing the little chin bar for $2.5 million, the little chin sticker. It's crazy. It's just crazy. There's teams that are like that are struggling to get a sponsor to, you know, put a gigantic sticker on their bike, and Valentino Rossi has a $2.5 million sticker on his helmet.
And there are teams that run on. I mean, well, you know, $2.5 million is most of their budget,
right? Right.
Yeah,
it's pretty insane.
It's the power of marketing. It really is. It's true. It's sad but true.
Yeah. So anyway, a little worried about Danny and Honda in general is just having a rough time. It looks like the Gresini guys were complaining about their just one step at a time. They're kind of. Stuff and they're just not doing a good showing. I mean, the only guys who are slower are the Pramac guys and
Kawasaki and, Hayate, whatever we're gonna call it. Yeah.
It's not just a team, but the actual brand make is not even listed as Kawasaki. It's listed as Hayate. So
I thought that was interesting.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think that the actual team name, the official team name, is simply Hayate Racing Team, if I recall from reading the
Hayate Dorna.
Yeah, yeah, that would actually be funny.
Yeah, that would be funny.
Extremely funny. In a lot of ways, I'm glad Marco's still involved. You know, it'd be nice to see John Hopkins and stuff there too. But it's also sad because I know they're not going to do very well. And it's sad on several levels because you've got Marco Melandri, who's a rider capable of a lot more. but he's put out there on, you know, the last year's bike, all the reasonable routines, all the reasons. And it's also
in fact the press release says previous runner-up to the world championship Marco Melandri. You know, and it's like, yeah, it's true. I mean, he once
five-time GP winner.
Yeah.
And also though Kawasaki, even though their name may not be on the official team and stuff, everybody that's halfway in the know knows this is the Kawasaki, and I think it's causing damage to their branding as well.
That was coming no matter what. I mean, if they had pulled out and not been on the grid at all, I think it would have been damaging also.
Yeah, I suppose. And it's not like they're exactly setting the world on fire in superbikes either.
Yeah, but they are. Well, they're not that. They're not.
Like they're really in contention. Yeah. I mean, you know,
they were surprisingly. I thought they were surprisingly good during the run up to the races. They just didn't do so well in the racing itself. Yeah.
I don't know. Well, let's talk about World Supers. They got a new qualifying format, which you understand the new qualifying format better than I do.
How do you know?
I saw an email where he explained it. And I was kind of like, okay.
it's very cool because there's three time sessions, but you only have two qualifying tires. So you kind of have to play a strategy like, do I save my qualifiers to really get to the front, or do I use my qualifier during the first session to make sure that I get into the second session? You know what I mean?
Right.
Basically, it's a knockout format, so you get after the first session, you get 16 guys left, and then you do another session, and there's 8 guys who make up the front two rows.
Somewhat similar to the Formula One qualifying, which...
Yes, it's very much like that.
Yeah, in Formula One, the qualifying's been a lot more interesting than the races. So, yeah. I mean, not setting the bar very high there, but...
Yeah, I didn't watch the Super Bowl, because, of course, the speed wouldn't show it. And
you mean the old Super Bowl or the new
Super Bowl?
So they're still calling it Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think they are still calling it Super Bowl. Okay. I don't know why, but they are calling it Super Bowl.
Yeah. Okay. Slightly different Super Bowl. So,
yep.
Yeah.
So that was cool, and of course the you know, Ben Spies grabbing that top spot was pretty cool.
Right. Yeah. Because I mean, with World Superbikes, you can see the stuff on the official website. Eventually,
mm-hmm.
And you can, you know, there's other ways to see this, but I'm still, I don't know what it is. It's like, I want to be able to watch it on my TV that my DVR recorded. I don't have to go a lot of screwing around, you know, and just watch it. And I wish they would show the qualifying.
Yeah. I mean, the worst thing about speed is mm-hmm. like they grab the rights and then they screw it up.
And then snarf it. Yeah, exactly. And I had my semi-annual speed rant last week. I don't think I'm allowed to do it twice in a week, twice in a row. So, but we know that you guys suck. So,
yeah. Basically.
But I think that's interesting because I think the old Super Bowl qualifying format with single bikes circulating around and stuff was a little clunky. And I never really thought it was great.
I think the worst thing about it was just that it was really one lap. I mean, granted, with the qualifying tire, you pretty much only get one or two laps. But I just didn't like that the two races hinged on one lap.
Yeah, know? It is.
And
it's
like
that's
the smallest
true.
Mistake and yeah. your whole weekend is screwed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, still to a point, you've got two races hinging on the qualifying session, which, you know, may or may not, you could have a bad, you know, if you go into that third session and something goes wrong and everything, so it kind of screw the pooch, that's going to mess up the whole weekend. Which actually, I mean, what was Haga? Haga qualified way down the
terrible.
Grid.
Oh, yeah. 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 He was like 16th.
It was in the teens, 13th, 14th,
it
something. It was way down there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you had to fight through both races.
Right. Now, of course, it's Nitro Nori, so, you know. Yeah. And that first race was good to watch. That was neat stuff. Because we had – well, let's cover the front row, which I think I can remember off the top of my head. Because I don't have it in front of me. Ben Spies on pole, which was big news, you know, rookie blah, 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 gets pole, first superbike outing. And that is actually, it's quite an achievement. That's a good thing. Maybe Ben left the mom at home, so he was more focused and something.
Well, his mom was there.
His mom was there.
She was definitely in a couple of the shots. Like, yes!
But in any case, Spies made pole, and that's good stuff. Biaggi, second.
Yeah.
I thought that was
Priya fun. Was everybody was actually there's some rumblings. I think the Hanspeed guys are complaining that this Priya, because the fuel injector that they're using is not a homologated superbike, and you know, whatever.
yeah. We've seen this before. Rule nitpicking. I mean, granted, you know, I guess they have a right, you know, if this is true, then yeah, sure, they have to sort of complain and, you know, yada doodle, but it's still, it just, do we have to take away from the racing by this whining about a bunch of rules?
So right.
Face it, you guys got owned, you know?
Yeah, so Aprilia is very, very impressive. BMW, not so much. Those are the two, obviously, guys who are entering out of the blue, kind of. Like,
we didn't really
even know about it until mid-year last year.
Right.
They're going to be here. So that's really, really cool.
Did you really expect a lot from the BMW, though?
No. But actually, I thought in race one, they put on a pretty good show.
I think they made a good effort. I mean, excellent effort. Yeah. Probably better than Triumph. But, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, you take the bags off of BMW, and I said this a couple shows ago. So I'm recycling a joke. I reuse, reduce, recycle. But BMW seriously does have a long racing heritage. This is a company that should be able to get it right. But on the other hand, just suddenly coming out the gate and saying, we're going to race in World Superbikes. That's, yeah, okay. You know, it's not that easy, guys.
Yeah. Definitely. But I think they did pretty well.
Yeah.
They finished in the points in both races. They had guys finishing in the points in both races, so that's pretty cool.
That's good stuff.
It's more than we can say for, say, I don't know, like Kawasaki?
Yeah, exactly. Who've been doing it for quite a few years.
who did not finish in the points in either race. So.
Yeah, very, very sad. Their World Superbike effort, I think, is a little lean. Do you have the qualifying in front of you? Because I can't remember off the top of my head.
I do not.
And I'm looking for it on the World Superbike
website. They don't have a listing. They have the final setup for Super Bowl. They don't have the grid.
They don't have qualifying at all? I know. I'm looking around for it, and it's like, wow. It's a bit of a jumble, isn't it?
All right. So, obviously, World Superbike is still running. They're still running the four riders side-by-side. So, we had Spies, Biaggi, Jonathan Rea, and Jakob Smirts, the first Ducati, on the front row.
Smirch excellent qualifying really effort well. From both those guys. Yeah, exactly.
He did well actually all weekend. He was doing well in the free practice sessions too. The guy that really was actually disappointing was Shaky Byrne
and Haga
Haga was 13th.
Yeah.
So let's keep going. So Fabrizio Haslam, very nice. Carlos Checa and Lacone. Mm-hmm. Now, Regis Lacone we'll talk about it later because he was very interesting in that second race.
Why don't we mention the teams that these guys are on? Because to be honest you, on some of these, I don't even know.
Yeah. Right. So Ben Spies, he's a Yamaha factory. Then Max Biaggi, Aprilia factory. Jonathan Rea is on the Honda factory team, Hanspeed Honda. Jakob Smirts is on a... Now, I don't remember the name of this team.
I'm looking, and I'm not finding it.
He's
on the Ducati.
Guandalini Racing, yeah, Ducati.
Yeah.
Then we've got Haslam, who's Stiggy Racing.
Right.
And then we have... Jesus, did I mention Fabrizio? I forgot Fabrizio. Fabrizio is actually factory Ducati, so he was fifth.
Right.
Sixth Haslam, seventh Checa, who's with
Hanspeed
again.
Yeah.
Like last year. Then we've got Lacone, who's on a Ducati, and he's riding on a single rider team with DFX Corsa.
Yeah. Real quick back, Checa's team is actually different than than Jonathan Rea's. Yeah, it's well, no, he's the same as Jonathan Rea, but there's another Hansbury team as well.
Oh yeah, with
also Honda Althea, Hansbury Honda Althea.
Yeah, right.
With, right. And that's Hill.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I don't understand exactly what the difference between those guys are, but they share a sponsor, but they definitely look different, the bikes.
Yeah, well, the Hansbury Tencati is as close to factory as you've got.
You just cut out
in
again.
World Supers, and I mean, is it truly a factory team? I don't know, but Garrett Tencati is truly brilliant. So I mean, it's the factory effort, but I don't think it's quite. It's a little bit like over here in AMA when. Who was it that was running a factory team, but it wasn't quite the factory team. And I'm lost now on who it was. But whatever, it's a bit weird. Well, whatever. I digress.
Okay. Well, third row we had Nakano in the second Aprilia factory, it was nice to see both those guys in the top 10. The Kyonari. And we have who's on the Honda, Kagayama on the Suzuki team, Tom Sykes, who's Spies' teammate. And then on the next row, we have got Haga, Neukirchner, Shaky Byrne, and Parks. And I think that I didn't watch Super Bowl, so I don't know exactly what the deal with Haga was, but I think he may have saved his qualifiers and basically not gotten into the top eight.
Something bad happened, and yeah, whether it was a poor strategy or something, yeah, but I agree. Also, I unfortunately didn't watch qualifying either, so we're guesstimating at this point.
Right. So anyway, so we had race one. Very, very interesting first lap. I think we lost Chiannari almost right away, and then Ben Spies got ran off.
Actually, yeah, Spies got ran off before Chiannari went down.
Before Chiannari,
yeah.
Okay.
And, it was a tussle with, I thought it was with Haga, but it was with Biaggi.
Right.
And, and just, you know, a little contact, a little World Superbike, normal, you know, fairing, rubbing thing going on. Mm-hmm. And whatever, it stood Ben Spies up and went right off into the gravel, and it screwed his race.
Yeah, basically totally screwed his race. He recovered, I think, in 20th place or something.
He went off again the second time into the gravel, but still managed to finish. Yeah, it was just outside the points. But also his last lap was 1 second faster than the winner's last lap.
Oh, yeah. Well, the winner was...
Are we going to go ahead and give it away? I didn't know if we wanted to, you know, spoil our results here.
No, we're spoiling.
Okay, well, is you know, Haga at the end of race one there, Haga and Neukirchner were battling it out, and it was good stuff. But and there, you know, so their last laps, they were very, very serious because it was a very, very close finish. But Ben Spies' lap was somewhere in the neighborhood of 1 second faster than their lap.
Right.
I mean,
right.
He was pushing.
Let's face it. I think if Spies hadn't run off the track, it would have been a very different beginning to the season already.
Oh yeah,
it's just two races in, one weekend in. But
I agree. Well, that was something that I noticed a lot was that the Yamaha, at least with Spies on the helm, when you talk Spies versus Haga, right? Mm-hmm. When they were battling, Haga's on the Ducati, factory Ducati, Spies on the factory Yamaha. It looked like that Yamaha had a lot more power on the straight than the Ducati did. I mean,
It's interesting. I think it has a lot more power getting on the straight, and then it's just really hard for the Ducati to catch it at that point. It is a very long straight. It's a fairly long straight. It's not very
a lot
long
of sweepers
straight,
at Phillip Island too, which keeping your speed up and all of that. Qatar might be a bit of a different story, although Qatar being sort of the Formula One modern style track, it'll probably favor the Yamaha as well.
Mm-hmm. Could be. Although, you know, low torque, Ducati, twins, we'll see. Mm. So we Haga and Neukirchner really put on a great show. You know, I'm not a huge fan of Neukirchner, so I was really like, God, I hope he doesn't win. I really want Haga to win.
I definitely wanted Haga to win because I am a fan of Haga. It's not an anti thing. But yeah,
I don't know why. I just do not get excited about Neukirchner. And... Yeah, but they put on a really good show. They swapped laps, and you know, the race was won by three one-hundredths of a second?
Something crazy. Crazy fast of a thing. Yeah, I was basically jumping up and down, and it was a bike length.
Yeah.
And
Haga really was very, very exciting to watch, as always. You have to figure he had to battle all the way from 13th.
Yeah.
Although Neukirchner was 14th.
I was going to say, Neukirchner qualified way down there, too.
Yeah,
so both those guys made it way up through the field and took off and had a good battle. Neukirchner leading, then the Haga pass, and, you know, a slight misstep by Neukirchner gave Haga the chance to come in, which I can't remember exactly what that was on. It was like four or five laps from the end.
Mm-hmm. It almost actually Jonathan Rea led for a good part of the race in the beginning.
He had
a really good start, but he kind of faded, and then he kind of got his rhythm back, and him and Haslam had a really good race together. Fabrizio came through nicely because he had a crappy start and ended up beating those two guys,
right?
And then of course, you know, Kagayama kind of, I think on the last lap, kind of like made up of three spots or something.
Was it that much? Because he was a bit of a surprise.
It was very surprising. Like, he just came out of nowhere and he just grabbed the podium there. So
right.
Those four guys were fighting for the podium, and Kagayama ended up taking it. So very nice race. And we had race two, of course. I thought race two was actually much more interesting.
Maybe I was paying closer attention during race one or something. It's always hard, you know, watching the race, and I didn't know the results. I stayed away from watching the results, but I watched it on the speed feed, which was what, on Tuesday or whenever it was, that Wednesday. I don't know.
Wait,
I watched it on Wednesday night, and whenever they actually showed it, my DVR recorded it, you know, but I watched it on Wednesday night for race two. They didn't show it on Sunday, no.
Wait, and Wednesday is today.
Okay, I watched it on Tuesday night, and no, we're recording this on Thursday. This is Thursday, Jules, because that's when the show gets done. Whatever. Okay, I watched on Tuesday because Speed still does have some homage to the old two-wheel Tuesday, motorcycle Tuesday thing that they had. Basically, it means they show some reruns of races on Tuesday and say that they're a motorcycle racing channel, and whatever. I had avoided the results and everything, but I couldn't quite. Maybe it was because it was Tuesday. I was tired after work and everything. I don't know. I couldn't quite get into it like I was on Sunday with race one. So I found race one more satisfying. I thought race one was a better race.
It was a good race. Well, they were both fantastic races. I mean, you have to figure that both races were won barely. You know, with the front riders kind of deciding it on the last. Well, okay. So race two was really set on two laps from the end, but. But
the last little bit, the last couple of laps, yeah.
And we had, you know, lots of lead changes. The reason why race two, we had, you know, we had Biaggi up there leading for a while. We had Haga and Spies obviously battling again. Haga came through, so he was my hero. He did end up finishing second, which means that he is leading the championship. And here's something interesting: when was the last time that Noriyuki Haga led the World Superbike Championship?
Jules, when you asked me trivia, I
didn't know. I was like, I've been a fan of his for a very long time, and I was like scratching my head. I was like, was this the first time? Like,
the thing is, he's almost there. He's always right up at the top, but
he always starts the season off really crappy. The beginnings of his season is almost always crap. He crashes. He seems distracted or something. Then he focuses and he comes, you know, barreling in at the end. You know, like, this is definitely the last 2 years. That was definitely the case with him.
Yeah.
So I was like thinking, like, I don't actually remember him ever leading a champion. So I had to look it up, and actually he did, and that was in his first year in Superbikes, which was in 1998. And that was the year that the R1 was released. So he was on the R7, and I had just gotten my R1, so I went to Laguna Seca, and I was like, hey, there's this guy riding around on a Yamaha, and he won the Laguna race. And that was Haga. And I was like, oh, I like this guy. He's cool. That was his first full season in Superbikes. And he won the first three races out of... The first three out of four races. So, But then, of course, Fogarty ended up winning the championship.
I think one of the reasons I like Haga is he's like very charismatic. He's funny. There's a lot of little interesting quirks about Haga. I know that when they retired the R7 and, you know, so they had the R1, they had to get the forks off of the R7 that was like in the museum in Japan, because, you know, Haga said, you know, I've got to have the right forks. And so they took the forks off the R7 and put them in the R1 for him or something along those lines. I remember that story from several years ago. And just stuff like that. You know, it's just, he's an interesting guy. He's neat. He gives good interviews. You know, I like rooting for Haga. Plus, I mean, what a hell of a racer. That's the thing
is like the reason why I was so impressed with race two was the way he was following Spies around when he was not in the lead. It's just like, he is kind of like the Valentino Rossi of Superbikes. 100% total commitment. Total trust in the guy in front of him and in his own abilities, which actually gets him in trouble a lot, because like that incident last year with Biaggi, when he was following Biaggi around, and Biaggi kind of had a little setup and then took Nori offline, and Nori ended up screaming at, you know, waving at Biaggi and crashing. He's obviously, you know, it doesn't always work out, but the way he follows the other riders, he has a different line, and that's that they were talking about this. I think before the race, somebody asked him, you know, how come your line is so different than everybody else? And he said, I don't know, everybody else's line is different than mine.
Yeah, exactly.
how come everybody else's line is different than mine?
And the thing is, it works for him. Where was the race when we were talking about that so much, where they had some excellent, like, high angle shots and you really could see the line? And I think it was...
Definitely at the Nürburgring.
Yeah,
you could see he was just taking really different lines, and I think in Portugal.
Yeah, and actually, I was thinking it was at the Italian round.
Imola
for supers. Yeah, it must have been Imola.
Vallelunga, I think you're thinking about, because
Vallelunga. And it's interesting to watch, because it
basically
is,
anywhere you can see.
Yeah, well, you can see the line when they have the camera angles right, so that you can see the line. Because, you know, when they have the long shot where they're coming at you,
right,
it's a little hard to tell sometimes. But when they have that kind of overhead shot on the inside of the corner, you can see the line, what's going on. And Haka does. He takes the corners quite differently.
Yeah, and I actually have to say that the most amazing pass of this entire weekend was – it's actually a very classic pass, but really extreme version of it. Which was when Haga passed Fabrizio in race two, on top of Lucky Heights. And, like, you know, it's a very common place where you set up the guy by going on the outside at Lucky Heights, then inside at MG. But, like, Fabrizio really knows that move. Bayless used it on him last year, and there was no way he was going to just let Haga do it. So Haga really had to take this extreme outside line to get in there. Right. He just committed to it. It was amazing. And then he stuck it out.
His the front was like sliding all over the place on that.
It was crazy. Yeah.
He trusts in that motorcycle. And also he's not, they don't call him Nitro Nori for nothing. He's just not afraid of crashing.
Right, which gets him in trouble, because that's the one problem he has. You look at that year, 1998, he won five races. Carl Fogarty won three.
Oh, wow.
Carl Fogarty walked away with a championship. Norihiko Haga was sixth. You know, it's like...
Yeah, because he probably crashed out of five races.
Exactly.
You know, he won five and crashed out of five. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
And I don't know. Maybe that's why I like him.
Yeah. I mean, he's very exciting. No fear. Yeah, so it was good stuff, good races. I haven't seen a Super Sports. I heard it was a very good race also.
Right, I have not watched it either. And, you know, I will. I'll get around to it. It's on the DVR.
Yep.
But, yeah, you know, we gotta pick and choose our battles here, and we tend to talk about, you know, the top tier, you know, because we tend to ignore the 250s and the 125s in MotoGP, you know, a little bit too much, unfortunately, and the same story with Supersport in World Superbike. But it's also, it's excellent racing. It's well worth watching.
So, you know, losing Biaggi on the last lap was kind of a bummer because he was up there fighting, well, probably not for a podium at this point, but a good position, which would have been nice for Aprilia.
I think they did, for you know, their first official outing in World Superbikes, I think they did very, very well.
Extremely.
And they have a lot to be proud of.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I'm in Biaggi, who Biaggi has so changed since his MotoGP days. It's almost like he's tailoring his persona to his environment. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. You know? You mean the fact that he's not whining about anything?
Well, yeah. I mean, when he was in MotoGP, his job was to be the bad boy of MotoGP, right? And I mean, when Laguna Seca was at 2005, you know, people were booing him and stuff, and I was like, oh, come on,
really?
You know. But it, yeah. In the stands where I was at, they booed Max, and I kind of thought it's like, come on, you know. But it's like, it's a little bit like that was his job in MotoGP, right? He had to be the counter,
the villain
to Rossi, right?
Right.
And but I think in World Supers he's just, I don't know, he's adapted, he's overcome, he's now his job is to be the guy. I'm not 100% sure what his job is, other than, you know, drawing some, you know, the Italian
race.
Viewers
to,
yeah,
I mean,
to race.
It's the
there
race.
You go.
I mean, I think that taking 2006, you know, he had that season where he didn't have a ride in 2006, so I think there was a lot of retrospection, and you know, he kind of looked at his career and decided he's just really going to focus and do really well. And I mean, look what happened in 2007, first race on the World Superbikes, he wins it, you know. So
yeah.
Fantastic.
I thinking about this just suddenly hit me just now. I was I went to the maxbiaggi.com or whatever the hell it is, and I signed up, and I used to get his, like, you know, emails, blog entries and stuff of stuff. I haven't had that in a long, long time, and I haven't even checked his website out, so I don't know if he's still sort of keeping that up or not.
Yeah, he does. I do check it out once in a while, but yeah, you're right. He's not as active, like, with the fan base.
Yeah.
I think he's really just focusing on the racing.
So many of these guys need a good PR person.
Right.
Is what,
they really,
you know,
do.
Just somebody, look, you know, you say a few things and I'll say that you said it and type it up in a suitable way and post it.
Right.
You know, and it's like you're making a fair amount of money up there. You need to, you maybe, you know, do that to publicize your efforts.
Either that or just, you know, make it illegal to have PR of any sort. And like, let guys like Fogarty and stuff like that mouth off. I mean, come on. I really miss Carl, having Carl around.
All the PR people in the world can't make Carl Fogarty sound like not an asshole. So, I mean, you know. But just some of the stuff, you know, you get these quotes from these guys and stuff, and it's like, I can't believe you just said that, dude.
Right.
You know, just stuff. You know, it's just amazing. It's how it works, and you do sort of wonder the level of their actual, how much are they really involved in this, or is this just somebody that's sort of doing it for them? And you know, obviously the full-on factory press releases, yeah, I really don't think that Valentino Rossi said exactly all of that big long paragraph that you just typed out that he said. But you know, the gist might have been there. So
all right, well, you know, I got nothing else, and
well, we didn't really cover the results of race two at all.
Oh, sure.
We didn't even talk about race two. We've been going on about race one. So, real quick, let's talk about race two.
Okay.
Because race one was because Spies had his off in the first lap. Virtually, was it the first corner or
it was the second corner.
Second corner,
yeah.
And
it's exactly the same place that Pedrosa went off in Australia last year. And
second outing into the gravel for Spies. So race one was a disaster for Spies, but race two was pretty much picture perfect.
Yeah. He did make a couple of mistakes that let Haga get in front. I think if he didn't, he would have finished.
He didn't lead flag to flag or anything like that.
Yeah.
No, but he got a decent start.
Mm-hmm.
He was passed early on. He didn't even officially lead lap one, did he? But, you know, he had a good start. He got up front. And then he just, you know, he worked and he got his way past and had a battle and finished the race and won by not quite a second, if I do recall. You know, so it was a sizable gap. It wasn't like race one where it was like barely a bike length.
No, actually, he won by 1.2 seconds.
1.2 seconds, yeah. Right. Like I said, it's a sizable gap. Not an enormous, you know, MotoGP style 25-second gap lately, but but still, you know, a fair sized gap. And I think he did a spectacular job. And yeah. So I'm looking forward to seeing Spies' efforts in Qatar, see what he can do, and all of that.
It would be very different, I think, if he hadn't had that runoff. But you know, he is new, and I don't know. I think he's going to have to really concentrate on consistency than trying to, you know. He's an interesting position because, you know, I mean, he has battled against one of the most, you know, one of the most, like, intense racers, Mladen.
Matt Mladen is insanely competitive. Very difficult to race against, yeah.
Very competitive. And granted, it was just those two guys fighting, and here there's a lot more than just two guys that are capable of winning races. But, you know, he does have the ability to be very intense in an intense race and complete races. It's not like, you know, he throws right. races away. So I think that he has, I don't know, it would be pretty insane to imagine him winning the championship first time out.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's a little early to talk about that, but yeah.
Well, I know it's early, and I'm not saying that based on the results. I'm saying it based on the results that he has in AMA racing, that when he's on a good bike that he can really, and he has a great bike, so.
Oh, the guy's a racer. There's no doubt about it. And I think that one example between the difference between AMA and World Super is just exactly what you said. He was battling Matt Mladen in the AMA, but he was pretty much only fighting as Mladen.
They may as well just had those two bikes.
Right. So now he's going to have to, he's got Biaggi, you know, bumping him off track kind of a thing. And so it's going to be a question of how he can deal with that, you know, that first few laps muddle, because World Superbike stays pretty tight for quite a while.
Oh, yeah. And there's a lot of talent. I mean, Leon Haslam, another great racer, you know, he's really showing to be a fantastic racer. You know, Neukirchner, Kagayama, you got Smertz, you got Zaus, who can, you know, ruin your race in on any given day.
Yes.
And, you know, and you can't count. I mean, I think Nakano's going to do better and better this season, and because I think Aprilia is going to be doing better, and I think Nakano has a lot left in him. So, yeah, so he's suddenly going to be battling against a lot of guys. And
learning new tracks, too. I mean, he's never raced at Phillip Island before, you know.
I know. That's why I'm very impressed, very impressed. But I'm still going to be rooting for Haga.
Oh, me too. I like Haga, but Nitro Nori.
I just really want him to finish the career with at least one Superbike championship.
Yeah, so he's not the guy that, you know, won so many Superbikes and never got the champion or, yeah, you know, yeah, whatever yeah. it is. Yeah, exactly. That statistic. I agree. I don't want Haga to become that guy. So there's the super quick recap of race two that, hey, it was good. And what it was, Spies, Haga, and third
Haslam.
Place. Haslam.
Yeah.
In race
so
two.
That was great to see him there. And kudos to Lacone, of course. Lacone, he did really pressure Biaggi for a while at the front. And he looked good for a podium, but Haslam got the better of him.
Yeah. And we didn't see a lot of that on TV that I recall, not nearly enough, because the racing up in the between Haga and Spies was close enough that was where the cameras were focusing, but it was quite a battle. I think they did a pretty good job on the feed. The race direction, if you want to call it that, of the television, you know, feed was pretty good.
Actually, you know what? I remember they actually did show that battle.
They showed a little bit of it.
Between Lacone, Fabrizio, Haslam, Smertz, Neukirchner. They showed it in those last two laps. And I was like, actually was like, really wanted to see what was going on up front, because I thought maybe Haga could have made it up the spot he lost to Spies on that penultimate lap. Oh, boy.
Okay, well, I think that probably, you know, we kind of butchered this race coverage enough.
Well, Let's just okay. It was very exciting. Motorcycle racing is season's starting again. So road racing season. So
yeah.
I was very very excited. In fact, I stayed up all night that weekend. Even though I was like finishing my moves, so I was kind of bleary eyed the next day.
Did you watch them on the official site or? I can ask this. That's fair.
Okay.
when do they become live on the official site? Don't they on worldsbk.com?
I grabbed them the moment that they became available.
Okay. Put it cool. That way. And the idea, there you go. So, hey, we got to watch our World Super somehow, you know? And, mm-hmm. and all of the bits and pieces, of, like we've got MotoGP, which I said last week was with the full team of Toby Moody, Julian Ryder, and Randy Mamola. And unfortunately, I was wrong. Mamola is not coming back for that Eurosport team.
And it's not going to be the same because they're not actually going to all the races. They're only going to like three rounds. They're going to be in an office in, I guess, somewhere in England. Doing the coverage of the video feed. So
yeah, and the thing is I mean, as far as their commentary is concerned, that's very similar to what they do at the races. You know, they're not really looking out the window.
I was just going to say that is to some degree true, but you know what? Like
there's more to it. Yeah, exactly. The whole atmosphere.
They really eat up the atmosphere and they add to it and I will never ever forget my favorite moment of Eurosport coverage was when last year when Rossi won in Mugello and then they opened Julian Ryder went and opened the windows and he's like just listen
right
and it was like for like you know 10 seconds all you could hear was just a crowd outside. That was just so cool. They're just classy dudes, you know.
It'll be interesting to see if how it goes is Eurosport coverage now not nearly as good, you know, et cetera, how they handle it because I think that whole being there and talking to the riders and wandering around and just sort of, you know, kind of networking, if you want to call it that, is I think it is important. And without that, how well will these guys do? And I still think they'll do very well. I think that we'll be listening to some commentary that's spectacular, but it will be lacking because Randy Mamola is not involved. Because Randy Mamola always lent a very much, you know, been there, done that, writer, technically sort of side that, mm-hmm. that even Julian Ryder, with his technical expertise, it wasn't quite the same.
Yeah, no, definitely. And he was almost prophetic, like...
Oh, yeah.
Many times.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Like, watch this on this corner. This is going to happen, and then it would happen.
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of thing, yeah. So, I don't know. And also, is Mamola going to be involved at all? I mean, is he still doing the two-up rides and all of that? Have you heard anything about that?
Nothing. I actually did look that up, and I didn't see it. So
interesting. And we'll have to find out. And, of course, obviously, we always wish... You know, the very, very best to all these guys. And so I hope, you know, Randy Mamola lands on his feet somewhere else and gets a very high paying gig. But
as opposed to last year's.
Yeah. So, well, in any case, all right, that sounds good. Why don't we call it a wrap? And we'll talk to you again, I guess, next week, although we don't have anything coming up. But we've got World Supers coming up again the weekend of.
The 14th?
14th, which it's in Qatar, so they're doing the race on Saturday, plus you've got time zone issues, et cetera, et cetera. So if you're going to watch it live, it's on Saturday on the 14th. And for us here in the States, they'll show race one on the 15th, as far as I know, although I have not checked the speed schedule, but I'm pretty sure that's how it'll be.
Right.
So, and that's what I'm going to be doing at Kelly's O, assuming that they don't screw it up, Sunday afternoon. March 15th, watching World Superbikes at Qatar.
Cool.
All right. Right on. Excellent. Well, we'll talk to you again next time, Jules.
Bye, man.
Okay, bye.
All right. This is Jim Race for MotoGPOD, and we've got Eugene Laverty on the line with us. How are you, Eugene?
I'm good, thank you.
Great. We're talking to you right after, or very quickly after, a fantastic race that you had last weekend in Phillip Island. With some outstanding results and some great lead-in. Just briefly, before we talk about that, just wanted to kind of get caught up with you a little bit. It's been, last time we talked was, I think, at the end of November, and without going through, you know, the whole off season and all those adventures and training and whatnot, kind of fill us in, if you could, up to the point where, your off season was basically over. You did your Port Mayo test, and then you mm-hmm. headed down to Phillip Island to prepare for that.
Yeah, we started passing at Almeria in Spain at the end of January before moving over to Porto Mayo for the official test. Yeah. And we really struggled in the beginning, to be honest, and it wasn't until our final dry session at Porto Mayo that we made a big breakthrough. Before then, we'd been well outside the top 10, just trying to figure out this Honda. But once we understood it, we were able to make a few big leaps forward, and I knew we wouldn't be far away for Phillip Island.
And you guys have 09 bikes, correct?
Yeah, we were the only guys running the 09 Hondas, and we made the right move. We didn't go out early for the test like the other guys, which meant we were a little bit behind the start, but the fact that we stayed back in the workshop in the UK and gave the mechanics some more time to get the 09 bikes up and running, and it was clear to see just how good a package it was out there. We were able to pass anybody in a straight line.
Do you feel that they're, or does Brains and Company think that they are substantially different from the 08s?
Well, over the winter, they did find a lot of horsepower from the bike, and top speed was something they were lacking. So we knew from the figures the bike was putting out in the dyno, even as early as December time and the end of November even, that we'd found something pretty special. So I'm happy now that the area the bike was lacking in, it's not exactly a weak point anymore. If anything, it's now the strongest bike out there. You can see that in the speed traps, and it showed us in the race with myself and Miguel how fast the bikes were. So it's going to be nice for tracks like Qatar with a long straight like that we'll be able to overtake.
Yeah, we'll touch on that a bit, but I can see you probably wanted just a little bit more maybe at Phillip Island, but we'll get to that in a bit. So you headed down to PI, and you've got relatives down there?
I've got relatives up on the Gold Coast, just up past Brisbane, so it was nice to spend some time out there, and Pippa was out with me also, so we spent some time with her relatives on the Gold Coast too. So it was nice just with some good weather and being able to train out there and relax mainly before the first round and get myself adjusted into the time zone a bit better.
Were you following the testing at all online?
Yeah, I was always following it. Every time I was checking on to see how the guys were doing, and I seen that Keenan had went pretty quick. He was near enough lap record pace after the test, so I knew I had a tough job on my hands. So with all that considered, I really didn't expect to be running just 1 second from the front at the end of the race, which was a pretty special result considering I was riding pretty well within myself the second half of the race. I knew I had to get a result and bring it home. I'd had a big crash in the morning warm-up session. I'd had it high-sided at 170 kilometers an hour, and it chucked me off. So I was hurting a bit and realized it was just important to bring the bike home and get some points on the board and move on to Qatar.
You did a little bit more in that, though. You had a hell of a race. Let's now I know that real quickly you had a goal for qualifying, and I believe what was it, a 36.5 or something like that.
Well, my qualifying time was 34.9 in the end.
Right, but you had had a goal that was a lot higher than that, and I was very impressed that you exceeded that pretty quickly.
Yeah, I wasn't sure where I wanted to be. My final lap time I had targeted for the first free practice 36.5, and that's exactly what I matched. And then to go into the 35s, and I carried on in that trend, so I was pretty realistic in the lap times that I would be capable of doing, and it was nice to be able to jump up the order and continue improving, because really we had limited track time compared to some of the other guys. But having worked with Brains for a lot of years before in British Championship, we knew what we needed from the bike, and the direction we went with the bike was completely the opposite to Porto Mayo. So Porto Mayo and Phillip Island, the two sentences from there, really the praise, you know, for the two different types of tracks that we can get the bike working anywhere.
Night and day a bit, huh?
Yeah.
When it comes to Brains, do you guys really even have to talk that much, or can you articulate to him very quickly what you need out of the bike?
We understand each other now, I guess. And he can tell from comments I'm making what direction we need to go with the bike. I guess that's what experience gives you when you work with a mechanic for a couple of years, whereas when you get with a new guy, and especially working with foreigners, they wonder what some of your expressions mean, especially being from Northern Ireland. Some of the words we come out with, a few people don't quite understand, but we're able to make a lot of headway in just 45-minute sessions. And at the end of the race, in the debrief, we sat down and discussed it, and there wasn't much more we would have wanted from the race, just from the setting on the bike, maybe a few changes. But considering we only really had maybe 3 hours track time before the race, we had the bike pretty spot on.
Yep. So, and you mentioned that you had your mega high side in the warm up on Sunday. I think Foray also had an off and popped his shoulder out too.
Yep.
And there was actually speculation whether or not that he would even make it out, and he did. So, starting just zipping through the race real quick here. Looks like you got a pretty good start, and going into one, you were somewhere in about, I guess, seventh place or so. Does that sound about right?
I was around there. I was a bit too cautious in turn two and let a few guys get around to the side of me. But really, on lap three, I started to move forward.
Right.
And within the next four laps, of course, I got to the front.
And so who were you spending most of your time with, say, around lap three? Because I was watching that with my eyes out and my fingers crossed. It looked like you were wrapped up with Harms there pretty well.
Good old Robin Harms was in there. I couldn't believe it when I touched Barry Veneman on lap two or three, lap two at the Honda Hairpin, and that allowed Robin Harms to get by me in the next corner. And the moment I seen Harms come by me, that was me demoted to ninth, and I thought, no, this is getting a bit too messy down here. I'm going to the front. So I swiftly made my way through, and I was at the front before I knew it. I couldn't believe how quickly I got to the front, but it was a strange race. The Tincari boys, their race plan, which I knew was going to be, was if they couldn't get away in the first two laps, then just bring the pace back down and look after their tyres for a push at the end. And that showed from Keenan especially. He dropped right back down the field and then came forward to win it. But I went to the front because I wanted to try and break the group of 15 riders. I could see there was too many guys there, and my aim was the top five at the finish, so I didn't want to be running around fifth position towards the end with another 10 guys behind me. If I made a mistake, I'd nip up the inside of me, so I tried to push on and break the field, knowing that my tyres would get spent a little bit, but I wasn't chasing the race win. I was just after a top five, and at the end, the tyres were still good, so we've got the bike working pretty well, and Solobain was tough on the tires for everybody, and we were there at the finish, and that was very important.
Yeah, I know. I noticed, and I was kind of, I noticed exactly what you were saying, was that Tincati kind of backed off a little bit and waited for the opportunity to unleash, you know, the horsepower that they probably got a little bit on you, wouldn't you say?
Well, I think we're much in muchness, really. Our bike seemed to have a little bit more, but it was very important on the start and finish. If you slipstream somebody but come out as you normally would, you would just stay alongside them because the wind would hit you, and sometimes you wouldn't get past. But to overtake the guys the way I was just about touching their back wheel before I'd come out past them, and that just gave me enough of a lunge to get past them and in front of them. You had to do that. It was a bit touch and go a few times, but you had to do that if you wanted to get back.
You were being there were at least two laps there where I think you would come out either second or get past right after the last corner, and incredibly brave on the brakes into one, just waiting, and the speeds you guys were carrying through one and indeed into two without going real wide in one I was super impressed. I was impressed, and at the same time, you know, you're like holding your breath around that corner because that's not a fun corner to have bad things happen on.
Yeah, with everybody going into turn one side by side because of the slipstream effect, I was sometimes sitting up early but just holding the gas on so nobody knew where you were braking.
Yeah,
it just really threw everybody off, and I was pretty strong around there. I could really push my way in, and it had actually been my weak sector through practice, and then I was pretty strong at the end of the weekend come the race, so I hadn't really many weak points. A few areas I was just trying to look after my tire and not push so much, and unfortunately, towards the end, we just lost the toe of the first three guys, but I had thought it was my fault because I was just being careful, but actually watching back, I realised it was Calcutt's flow. He had overtaken me and was right on the back of the front three guys with five laps to go, and then overshot the hairpin at MG, and that gave the guys a big break between them and me and Cal.
Yep.
So they got a bit of a break on us, and then Cal had more pace than me, and he came by again and then overshot again. So he was just riding a little bit loose, and that cost us, lost us the toe. Otherwise, we both could have been there right at the finish.
And the two of you had a rather epic finish. You just got a taste of the dirt on the exit of the last corner, and the two of you was a drag straight down to the finish line.
And I was pretty peeved with myself for that because I rode a perfect race. I can't remember really running wide anywhere. And then around the last corner, I was just getting every bit out of the tire and did the bike really upright. And I didn't really need to use all of the track, but the only reason I was to make sure that because the bike was just moving on the rear out of there, the revs were going up and down, so I was just trying to keep it as steady as possible. And as the rear tire was moving, it just sent me out that little bit wider. And before I knew it, I went over the other side of the curb. So I was frustrated to see Cal just come by me at the finish and pretty much trying to headbutt me as he came alongside me. So it kind of caught me off guard. He steered towards me. I got a bit off balance and just had to take my foot off coming across the line. But that's racing. And he just put me by 1/1000 of a second. Unfortunately, that cost me 2 points. But I won't make that mistake again.
Did you guys are mates for the most part? Did you chat with him afterwards?
I spoke briefly with him afterwards. I couldn't believe that he'd picked me, and of course that was the Yamaha team that I rode for last year. I get on really well with them boys, so I was having a joke in Parc Fermé because they just picked me. When I came into Parc Fermé, the guys had told me that I'd got fourth, but shortly afterwards they changed the screen after a photo finish, so that was gotten. I knew that Cal had beat me in the slowdown lap, and then when I came in, them guys told me I had fourth. I couldn't believe it. I thought that was fortunate, and then to have it taken away again was pretty heartbreaking. So, I had to get over that.
1/1000 of a second can be pretty expensive in a situation like that.
Yeah, just especially me having made the mistake. It's hard to come to terms with that because all I had to do was ride out of the last corner. I didn't need to use all of the road. I just went out over the other side of the curve. It wasn't that as if I'd ran wide in the corner and made a mistake. I was just an inch too far out.
But on the other hand, it was still a great result for you. It was what you wanted, and it was a proving of your position in the team and the talent that you have on the four strokes. And that's the first time you raced a four stroke there. So, you know, hey, well done.
Thank you. The lap times were very good, and we're all running a pretty hot pace in the 35s for the most part of the race. And my second to last lap was a 35.6 compared to my 35.3 earlier in the race. So with the tires and the condition they were, we were going really strong all race. And my teammate Miguel Pryor's lap times were impressive too. So it shows as a team we've come on a lot from last year, and we'll be chasing that first win very soon.
Do you know what happened to Miguel?
Coming into Honda Hairpin, he just ran in too hot and ended up colliding with Robin Arms and ran Robin Arms off the track. So I guess that's karma in some ways. But it just would have been nice for Miguel to get that top 10 finish that he's been chasing for a while, but I'm sure it won't be far away.
Yeah, he also had a real good preseason, and I think he himself was expecting to qualify a little higher, but good for him and good for the team as well. Did you guys go out and have a little celebration for accomplishing your goals?
Yeah, we went out to the Italian restaurant afterwards, and then we had a bit of crack. Johnny, myself, and a few others were out, so it was fun as usual, but we had a flight the next day. So we tried to get some sleep in before we headed back because it's a bloody long journey. We had, I think, 3 7-hour flights just to get back to England alone. So that sort of traveling just really takes it out of you.
Is there part of you that kind of, I mean, don't you wish you could sort of run a world championship but stay in the UK?
that would be ideal. I absolutely hate traveling. I just don't understand how some people take time off to go traveling. because it's the last thing I would want to do. But I suppose it's nice if you're actually traveling and going to see around the place rather than going to a racetrack every time. And the racetrack might as well be half an hour down the road because you really don't get to see much of the country. It's just a racetrack, you see.
And it's frankly a 24-hour job when you're there. Are you finding that, you know, when you were with your 250 team last year, and that was and the year before with LCR, you know, that was kind of a disheartening experience for you, and unfortunately it had you out of the limelight, and it probably, I'm guessing it seemed more like work then and not as fun. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, that's right. I never enjoyed it, and you've got to be enjoying it to get the best out of yourself. But it was beginning to hurt pretty bad because every time I was going out, I was having to push the maximum. It didn't matter what the weather conditions were. I had to be given 100% because we knew it could have been a damp race, it could have been a wet race, so I needed to be right up to speed to make the most of any opportunity that would come up. Because what one race, I could have got a good result in 250 if conditions were off, but I have to remember now that I'm fighting for a championship, so I've got to be careful and really assess the risks before I go out and give it my all every single session. And I learned that on Sunday in the morning warm-up session when it was damp at the beginning. I went out right away and went quickest, and then I came in to try the harder rear wet tire just to see how that would cope in them conditions in case we needed to go far in the race. And the rain started falling, and I was still pushing and ended up getting thrown off. So I realized afterwards I'm not in 250 Grand Prix anymore chasing one result. I have to put 14 of them together. So that brought me back down to earth a bit and changed my approach.
Are you seeing that are you finding that you're learning an awful lot? I mean, every time you go out, regardless if it's practice qualifying or the race, that every time you pick something up right now?
Well, it's nice being able to hang with the faster guys as well, if ever I want a tool through practice to learn anything. But I never really do slow laps. Every lap's a fast lap for me in practice, even the end lap, I try and pick something up. So you've always got to be trying to learn something while you're out there. We don't have to work on track for very long over a race weekend, so it's only 45 minutes on track, so the entire 45 minutes should be done going at full speed rather than cruising around looking over your shoulder, I think.
Sure. So basically we're done now. You've got your horrendous epic 21-hour flight home, probably full bit longer than that. You get home trying to reacclimatize to home for a bit. And then you're off to Qatar, which is, what, 5 hours difference? Not so bad?
Qatar isn't so bad. It's just 3 hours.
Okay.
So, and it's not such a long flight neither, so I won't mind that. Our flight leaves Heathrow on Monday morning, and then we arrive in Qatar on Monday night, which is nice because it doesn't really disrupt your sleep pattern. A lot of the time when I was in Grand Prix, we flew through the night, leaving in the evening and arriving there the next morning, and that just completely throws you off. So at least this time I can sit back in the flight and watch a movie or two.
Yeah. And I don't know, you've probably heard by now, but the GP boys were down there this last weekend, and their first night was basically ripped out by rain, no less.
You don't expect that in the desert.
No.
The rain seems to chase us.
Yeah, some like 2 or 3 days of rain a year, and it happened to hit right there. Yeah, that was kind of interesting, Are you still interested, I mean, as a fan or as in somebody that participated there in, not right now, mind you, but just watching the GP stuff?
Yeah, I've always been. I watch, there's some riders that don't follow the racing that closely, but I guess I've always been a fan of racing, bit of an anorak, so I'll follow every race that's going on, just as I've been following Daytona at the moment, and just keeping a close eye on that. We always follow myself and my brother Michael have always been enthusiastic in any form of racing, so we always know what's going on in every different class across the world.
Right on. And then thank you for the segue. Your brother Michael is now racing in the States in the AMA series in the slightly greatly changed series, and he's running in the American Superbike class. And in fact, they just ran their race today, not so long ago. And you want to fill him in on it, or should I help there with you?
Well, just before you called, I just got to see the final result that he was ninth position. So that's a nice start, just his first time out in Daytona, really essentially riding a privateer machine. So they've done well, him and the team, and I'm sure he'd be pleased with that. So he'd be hoping that he can carry on there in the US and work his way up the order, because no doubt he's got the ability, and he just needs to get everything else correct around him.
Yeah, and in fact, he was running quite well, is my understanding, judging from the timing and scoring, and just got pipped at the end by Josh Hayes, which is kind of another small world thing, because he was riding your bike at the end of last year, and it may be a big world, but it's fairly small at times when you're talking about the community of racers. You're reacclimatizing now. You just got to hear about your brother. Are you doing much training at all over this, or over the next few days, or are you just kind of going to relax and try and mentally prepare for the Qatar?
Just started back training today. I had a couple of days off. I didn't actually leave Phillip Island until Monday evening. Unfortunately, I would have liked to have left Sunday evening immediately. Just to get back home. But I had a couple of days off and back training today, and I'll have another 3 days training before I leave to Qatar, and then just relax out there and get ready for the race. And we're leaving a day earlier than usual to Qatar because it's a Saturday race, so a lot of the guys actually stayed out in Australia at the minute. I think Ben Spees is actually out there. Just as I was on the computer before you called, Ben left me a comment on Facebook as well. I think he's been keeping an eye on the AMA and Daytona too, the same as I am. Some guys just can't get away.
Well, Ben's old nemesis won the superbike race, so Matt Mladen, and so like I said, small world. Ben's down in Australia, right? Matt's up in the States. All right. Well, there were a couple of things in the race that I was going to chat to you about. You did have one real close pass on Cal, I think, that was in Honda, but I think we got the race covered pretty well. You glad to be back home for right now, and pleased with your position and ready to move forward then?
I was pleased when I had fourth position, but I wasn't pleased with fifth. I have to say that got to me a bit, but it's only 2 points, and it's early in the season. Most important was to get a solid result at the start of the season, and fifth in the World Championship doesn't sound so bad. Just the last couple of years I've been battling for points, and now I'm battling for race wins. It's hard to believe I can be disappointed finishing 1 second behind the race winner in the World Supersport Championship.
Exactly. And I think this, to some degree, that your stock was greatly raised, at least in the public eye, because you spent those laps in the front, and people got to see what you were all about again, and that's the way to do it. I'll tell you straight up that online and whatnot, I've seen all sorts of good comments. People are like, "Who's that kid? Well, you weren't paying attention before, were you?"
So I guess I forget that I knew what I was capable of coming into this season, and so did the team. My mechanics, Brains, and the rest of the guys as well, for team manager Simon Buckmaster, because they were interested in signing me before Vallelonga. Yep. It wasn't a case of they seen the result in Vallelonga and thought, I forgot that he was fast. They knew from British Championship it was. That's the only people I've been listening to and speaking to over the winter, so I guess I forgot that a lot of other people they didn't understand, I suppose, because they'd maybe seen Vallelonga and weren't sure if it was a flash in the pan or not. So I suppose for the general public, it confirmed that I can ride a bike and I'm capable of riding at the front of World Supersport.
And you definitely are, and I don't think everybody forgot.
No.
I want to congratulate you and wish you well heading down to the desert. And as we say, no rain for that. And let's look for good results down there. And if at all possible, I'd like to try and talk to you after that and see what we can work out, maybe even catching a little bit up, maybe shorter ones as the season goes on. So I appreciate it. Thanks very much, Eugene.
Yeah, no problem, Jim.
All right, cheers. Talk to you later.
Thank you. Bye.
That's going to do it for today's show. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks very much for downloading it. And let's see. Don't forget about Susie Frisbee's cool spot there at Miller Motorsports Park for the World Superbike Run there that's happening this summer. Check that out. If you're interested at all, send me an email, bob@motogpod.com. I will forward it on to Susie. And thanks very much to everybody out there who's listening. Thanks to Jules. Thanks to Eugene Laverty. Thanks to Jim. I think it was a good show. And we're going to talk to you again next week. MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I'm solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.